Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1643, air date January 23rd, 2026.
Fighting illegal immigration. And to all of you who are new to these town halls, welcome. We have a number of new people, and we're also broadcasting this on social media. And many of you know the Movement for Truth, Freedom, Health is a movement that teaches people to think about everything around them from an engineering system standpoint. It's a very deep educational curriculum that we made accessible. If you're new, go to truthfreedomhealth.com, become a warrior scholar. There's a whole free course that you can start with called Get Off the Plantation. But if you're seriously interested in doing something about what's going on versus merely being a spectator, we're going to teach you what we have to do to what we call the Shatter the Swarm. If you're into just whining and watching podcasts and talking about stuff, listening to other idiots who just talk about stuff and steal our material but have no intention of doing anything, this is not the right place for you. But if you actually want to be an active citizen and do something, whether it's helping make phone calls to mobilize people, helping us get on the ballot for the U.S. Senate campaign, handing out flyers, but actually doing something, okay? And getting off your ass and wanting to take concrete, what may seem like mundane actions with other citizens who actually understand the dynamics of the swarm, then this is the right place. And that's what we do. We call it a warrior scholar program. We teach you what you can do, that's a warrior part, how you can do it, but we also teach you the theory, which is the Foundations of Systems course. And then we do practical activities. You know, running for United States Senate, you can get involved. We have actual solutions for health, for clean food, for doing science and truth, cytosol, systems health. So we actually have real solutions, which is independent of the swarm. We're not waiting for anyone. We have a global organization of leaders, warrior scholars. So this is actually a independent, tangible movement that's organized. We are not just here to do freaking podcasts and mental masturbation. This is actually about people doing something. This is not a grifter action network. Okay? So if you actually want to do something, roll up your sleeves, welcome. And if you don't want to do anything and whine, we will give you a list of podcasters that we will refer you to and give you high recommendations so you can go join them. Okay? We don't really want you to waste our time, nor do we want to waste your time. So if you want to get some paper pad, this is being broadcast. We're dealing with a very, very fundamental weapon that's been unleashed on the American public. And this is a weapon that's been unleashed over and over and over again since people came to America. And it continues. And it's fundamentally to divide the exploited so they don't understand who the exploiter actually is. And it's a very clever technique. And you really have to review it and reflect on it so you don't be fooled, okay? And that's to put it nicely. So I want to review this. So everyone here actually understands what's going on so you don't get fooled, okay? So let's begin. First of all, I want to let you understand that ICE, which is this organization of typically men and women wearing masks, wearing military gear, ICE, that organization exists not to really solve the immigration issue. They exist to actually divide and rule us. That's the core thesis here, okay? And ICE stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. All right, so that's who ICE is if you don't know what ICE stands for, but it's Immigration, Custom, and Enforcement, okay? And ICE was created, or the propaganda was, ICE is going to get rid of illegal immigrants, rah, 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 we're going to get rid of these Somalis who are committing fraud, and some of them probably are committing fraud, but using that branding, we, in this case, the Trump administration, and by the way, everything that Trump has said, Obama also said, okay? And Obama actually got rid of more, during his first term, he got more rid of more, quote-unquote, immigrants than Trump ever did. So, but we want to talk about that ICE fundamentally exists, not to really address the illegal immigration issue, but to actually divide and rule us, working people, red, yellow, brown, white, black, brown, et cetera, okay? And what we want to discuss is that this has been a historical pattern where you manufacture a racial bias, and this is done beyond black or white, by the way. You split the working class up, and then you extract wealth via land theft, cheap labor, wars, and a growing military enforcement state. Okay, let me repeat that again. This is a historical pattern. And the problem is, with the advent of social media, no one studies history anymore. History is not even taught. So people live in these little micro movies, and they move from one thing to another. They have no historical understanding, so they can't see patterns. So this is a historical pattern. It is created to manufacture bias. That's what it starts. So you make, oh, those smelly, whatever, those ugly, blah, 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 blah. Or you can put up very harsh terms and it's promoted. But the goal is to split the working class, all of us. And by the way, the left and the right both participate in this process. But ultimately, the swarm profits because they extract wealth while they're attacking one racial group. They steal people's land. They get cheap labor. They get these poor people to go fight in wars of imperialism. And internally, within the state, within the United States, you become more and more of a surveillance state. So that's what we're going to walk through. And I'm going to teach you a little bit of history. We're going to understand the systems dynamic here, how this happens, how they divide and rule workers, the pattern. And once you see this pattern, you say, oh, they're just doing it again. So first step in this process, you pick a target group, right? You find a group, and then you attach a label to that group, criminal or diseased, or they don't assimilate, or they're terrorists, whatever it is. You find a group and you assign a label. Step one, that's first step in the pattern. The second thing is you use the law, you use the media, you use the police state to enforce that narrative. So you come up with whatever bias, then you unleash the law, the media, and the police state to enforce that narrative. As a part of that, step three is quite disgraceful, is you then pit workers against other workers. Either you put wage pressure, they're stealing your jobs, or you scapegoat people. That's step three. Step four is then you start running wars or chaos, and then you extract wealth over here while people, working people are fighting over there, okay? And Trump is a master of this, doing something with one hand over here and pickpocketing you over here. He just does it very blatantly. Obama did the same thing too, left and right. And the result is, through this process, every time this process goes, the end result is a swarm consolidates power, profit, and control. Okay, step one, pick a target group. Step two, use the media to enforce the narrative. Step three, you got workers fighting against each other. As they're fighting, you run chaos, you extract wealth, and then the end result is consolidation of power, profit, control. Okay, so that's the dynamic. Now, what I want to do here in this discussion is I want to track very precisely this discrimination against successive groups. So you actually see this pattern. So you don't think, oh, this is just, oh my God, the Somalis, oh my God, the Japanese. This is occurring in a very systematic way. It occurred starting with the American Indians. Then it occurred with the enslaved Africans. Then it occurred with the Irish. You see, we went from red to black to white, and it occurred with the Italians, then it occurred with the Chinese, and then it occurred with the Japanese, and now it's occurring with the Somalis. Okay? It's been a rhythmic process. And then we're going to name in each one of these cases what the bias, the narrative that they came up with, because I want you to understand the system science here. Then we're going to show the parallel, how the swarm profit system works. Either they're getting some land, as the workers are fighting over here, industrial labor, lowering of wages, they get more war budgets, they get more surveillance. So they extract something out of this while they're doing this. Remember, consolidate power, profit, control. And then I want to end with the fact that the executive branch of the United States government cannot solve immigration. It is Congress, which is mandated to pass laws to solve the immigration issue. And Congress, left and right, Republican and Democrat, have no interest in solving quote-unquote illegal immigration. And they'll never solve it because they get paid and put into office not to solve the problem. So if you just ended this video right here and you just reflected on what I just spoke about the last few minutes, you would really understand how you're all being fucked with. And you would stop getting involved in this nonsense, because the issue of using racial bias is very tribal. It's very primitive. It's really easy to get lost in this because it's making your race feel better than another race. Okay? So let's start. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty details. Let's start with the American Indians. Okay? The net of it was you stole the American Indians' land. Not you, but the swarm. They forced their removal. It resulted in corporate expansion, and was enforced by the law and the military. So that's sort of the net of what happened to the American Indians. Now, how did this happen? Let's go to the bias narrative. Step one. The narrative was that these people are savages. It dehumanized them. Quote unquote, they're uncivilized. They're an obstacle to progress. The concept of manifest destiny. And this was used to justify. So once you label them as animals, they're uncivilized. Oh, we got to remove them, right? So mentally, you program people to say, oh, they're less than us. It was used to justify forced removal, warfare, and seizure of land and resources. You see, you need the bias. So the others over here, the white, the brown, the yellow, whatever you want, feel better than the red man over here. So you have to pummel them. And if you go look at that period, the imagery, the art was funded to make these people look like savages, uncivilized, obstacle to progress. Step one. Then the divide tactic took place. You break the sovereignty of these tribes. You convert communal land. They never had owner. It was communal land to individual allotments. And then you isolate communities to reservations. And by the way, we could do a whole nother talk arguing that all of us are, you know, lots of people, white, black, yellow, are being put on modern digital reservations. And just as an aside, one of the biggest thing affecting young people today is gambling. So you have people gambling, you have people drinking, doing a shitload of cannabis, being anesthetized, and being incentivized not to work. So you're creating decentralized reservations now. But that's what was done to the Native Americans, okay? So you took their communal lands, you put them on little pieces of land, isolated them, and eventually put them on reservations. But all of this was done by creating this bias that they're savages and uncivilized. And just to give you some historical details, this was done very systematically. There were actually laws and particular events. You had the Indian Removal Act, of May 1830, and that authorized forced displacement of tribes on the East Coast, Eastern tribes west of the Mississippi. And that was called the Trail of Tears. You may remember this if you studied it in high school. And that was in 1838. You forced the removal of the Cherokee people. 4,000 deaths. I mean, this was what was reported in many historical accounts. And then you had the Indian Appropriations Act of 1871 that ended treaty making with the tribes, and it intensified federal control. And you had the Major Crimes Act of 1885, where you expanded federal jurisdiction over crimes, on Indian to the Indians. So there was a policy after you branded them as savages and uncivilized, then you could execute actual policies passed by Congress, by the way, okay, to steal people's land. So the profit engine, remember, so the fourth step here was power, profit, control, right? So land was stolen, acquired. It enabled homesteading. You had the expansion of the railroad, private extraction of timber, minerals, and oil from these people's land. Federal policy and troops went westward, and you had corporate projects like railroads and mining. And the outcome was you had the creation of even, modern barons, right? That still exist today. Generational wealth got transferred out of native communities into settler and corporate hands, okay? So it was systematically done to suppress one group, but ultimately it was about money, follow the money. Now the phase two of the profit engine was that the conflict was used to justify frontier military spending, right? So the military actually grew out of this, and you expanded federal power, not local power. The native local resistance, anytime it rose, was branded as a quote-unquote threat to security, and violence was rationalized because we got to go get these people to keep order. And you're seeing ICE do the same thing, okay? These people are a threat, so we have the right to justify shooting a mother three times in the head, going after citizens. It's like, once you do this, you can unleash all sorts of justification. So ultimately what happens, and it's happening today, is state power, the enforcement of state power grows, and then it's repurposed onto other groups, which could be all of us. It's clear, I think, a number of aircraft carriers are now in the Persian Gulf and the Arabian Sea. And if a major war starts and we start protesting, these same people will be used against us and it'll be justified. So it's a mental manipulation that's going on. So that's just the American Indians, okay? So ultimately divided the working class. And it worked because you had the settlers, the white settlers, they were pitted against the Native Americans. The white settlers were promised land access and social status, a quote-unquote share of the conquest. And this policy redirected anger away from the big guys, the financiers and monopolies towards the Native Americans and the settlers fighting, you see? So the big guys were extracting massive amount of wealth. So they had to have the local settlers and the Native Americans fighting. So power, profit, and control got consolidated. The second group in American history, okay, so now you put all the red people on the reservations. The next group that people put through the same pattern was the Africans, the enslaved Africans. And this was interesting because race was used as a control technology and involved, you have free labor, slavery, you had legalized terror against those people, and you divided the workers. In this case, the enslaved blacks were divided from the white settlers, who were divided from the Native Americans. And this was systematically done. So the bias narrative here was they invented a racial hierarchy. So black people were framed as property and therefore inferior, where the Native Americans were branded as savages and uncivilized, quote unquote, the black people were just branded as your property and therefore you're inferior. And this was used to normalize slavery and then later on segregation, and then later on repression of labor. So this divide tactic took the poor whites, who were equally getting fucked, and gave them a little bit of, made them feel better, racial status, to block class solidarity. So you divided the white people from the black people from the red people. But this is what goes on. And the elites know this. You attack one racial group and the other says, well, they're not attacking me, I must be better. So that's what they did to the poor whites. They made them feel better. Again, the same pattern, step one. And then specific laws were put in place. Again, Congress did this, just like Congress is not doing today anything against quote unquote illegal immigration. You go look at the Constitution itself, 1787. Yes, it has some good stuff, but there's some seriously bad things in there. That blacks were three-fifths, right? The three-fifths compromise, right? Which was ratified in 1788. Political power structure was intertwined with slavery. The Fugitive Slave Act in 1850 that required return of escaped enslaved persons, even from the free states. So if a slave got away to the free states, they had to be returned by the Fugitive Slave Act. And that expanded the federal government's enforcement versus state authority. And that's what's going on right now. If you look at what's going on in Minnesota, it's really federal power versus state power. People in Minnesota are saying, fuck this, we don't want this. In fact, some of the local police are starting to arrest ICE people. So the issue is power rest in the local states? Are we a republic or is it federal government? Okay, runs everything, centralized power. Then you had the very famous Dred Scott versus Sanford case, right? That denied citizenship to black people and it intensified sectional conflict. That was what Dred Scott was really about in 1857. So again, what happened here? The result, okay, this is my second example, is that the enslaved labor generated massive wealth, cotton, tobacco, sugar, right? Because you demean one group, you can extract wealth out of them. Banks, insurers, shippers, and global traders captured immense profit all around, you know, slavery. And the result was concentrated capital that later financed, you know, industrial expansion. Now, the other part of the profit engine, phase two, which I talked about. So first, you get power, profit, control. You get a lot of power and profit, but also you get control. Because what ended up happening was you started having slave patrols and violent enforcement that created templates for policing systems. So yes, so initially you unleashed police against black slaves, but that same infrastructure of the police infrastructure was used against all people. And so this legal terror maintained what? A cheap labor regime, suppress multi-ethnic workers organizing, right? The goal was always to keep workers separated. So again, this was dividing the working class. You had racial fear and you had status hierarchy. So poor whites were made to feel a little bit better than the black slaves. And this prevented any type of unified labor action across black and white workers. And this way the elites were able to stabilize low wages by keeping workers fragmented, because working people don't organize together. You can pay one working group a little bit more or less than the others, but overall wages are being suppressed because they don't come together to fight for their rights. Okay, second example. So that was what? Again, I wanna show this is beyond color because now they have a lot of this white people are being discriminated stuff to mobilize white people against everyone else. Okay, but the reality is white people, we talked about red people, black people, but let's talk about what happened to the Irish immigrants. And here they unleashed anti-Catholic nativism and wage competition, right? And they use this to fracture the urban labor pool. So what was the bias here? Okay, Indians were called savages. Blacks, you know, were called property, but the Irish were framed as violent, drunken, ignorant, and quote unquote un-American. And it was really anti-Catholic and anti-Irish stereotypes. So they started with that. And the divide tactic here was to exploit job competition. So the Irish were portrayed as strike breakers or threats to the native workers, which is called nativism. And some of the key events here, was some of you may know there's the St. Mary's Catholic Church was burned in New York City, right? So this was anti-Catholic violence and it really signaled organized nativism. Nativism is like racism. Hey, I'm a native here. I was here before you. I'm better than you. And then you actually had riots in 1844 in Philadelphia. These were anti-Catholic riots. Lots of deaths. Churches were attacked in the United States, okay? Against white people on white people, okay? Not blacks on whites, not browns on whites, but white people on white people. And there was also the party called the Know Nothing American Party. And that was saying, hey, we need to get rid of these foreigners against the Irish. And it organized political nativism, and it was to restrict immigrant power, okay? Again, this was against the Irish. And again, how did the swarm profit here? Well, phase one, the Irish workers took on a lot of dangerous jobs, a lot of low-wage jobs in canals and roads, docks and factories, where you had high injury and high death rates. And that was treated as acceptable because these Irish people were replaceable, okay? And in the middle of all this, again, the state consolidated. You had massive anti-union activities. You had strike breakers. You had ethnic conflict that was used to break strikes and weaken these labor coalitions. Employers also exploited these tensions to keep wages low. So that's the control mechanism, right? You had the power and profit, and you had the control mechanism, okay? So this was at a time when there was rapid industrialization, urbanization. Like today, we have the explosive growth of technology, AI, surveillance system. But this was at a time when you had rapid industrialization, and it concentrated wealth in the hands of the few. And the political machines traded patronage for votes, and it helped them stabilize the elite systems, okay? So that was Irish. Let's move on to the Italians now, okay? With the Italian immigrants, it was criminalization and quotas, mob violence, and that was used to justify repression and exclusion. So again, step one, I hope you're getting the pattern here, okay? What was the bias here? Okay, they're criminalists. The Italians were branded as criminals, every Italian was linked to the mafia and political violence. And collectively, there was a suspicion created against those Italians over there. And a lot of sensational crime narratives would come about to justify policing and exclusion. And in fact, again, there were laws that were passed here, Congress and governments passed laws. There was a mass lynching of Italians. A lot of people don't know. People talk about lynching, thinking it only occurred to black people. But New Orleans, there was a mass lynching of Italians in March of 1891. A mob murdered 11 Italian immigrants after the Hennessy case, and nobody was prosecuted. And then the Immigration Act of 1924, was called the Johnson-Reed Act, put national origin quotas based on the 1890 census, and that sharply reduced the number of Italians being able to immigrate in from Southern and Eastern Europe. The Italy quota was completely slashed. Now consider what Trump has recently done, saying that 70 people from 75 countries can no longer come. Okay? So again, history rhymes. Okay, may not repeat perfectly. And so what happened here? Well, the profit engine was, again, you had low wages, labor and construction, factories, docks that sustained industrial profits. You had criminalization, provided cover for surveillance of labor organizers and immigrant neighborhoods. So you always are doing some type of consolidation of power and some type of control. And then the biggest thing that occurred was controlling immigration was really political theater. Oh, we're gonna keep these people out. They're criminals. The quotas and restrictions that they imposed diverted attention from the exploitation by blaming immigrants, right? Nativism created electoral leverage while protecting many of the donor class economic interests. So that's what occurred. You always divert power to this group and you're consolidating power over here. At the time of the discrimination against Italians, that's now the early 20th century, there's a lot of labor unrest. And so the elites, so people are starting to organize like we talk about in our movement. in the early 1900s, right? Early 20th century. And the elites used the nativism and the fear of Italians, in this case, to suppress organizing power. And this also led to further expansion of federal power against quote-unquote subversives. And that laid the foundational network for the security state. And this was in the early 1900s. All right, I'm not done because I really want you to see this. Let's talk about the Chinese. A lot of people may not know this, but Chinese, particularly on the West Coast, who built most of the railroads, were massively discriminated and attacked as the next group. They were, the natives model was they were disease and they're stealing our jobs. And in fact, they were the first major ethnic exclusion, you know, that took place. So what was the narrative here? Okay. They called them the yellow peril. They promoted that Chinese carried diseases. Again, they always come up with something that you say, oh my God, these people are horrible. Okay. Chinese workers were framed as people who didn't want to assimilate. They were diseased. They kept using the disease thing and they destroyed our wages. And the divide tactic here was to turn again the pressure of wages into ethnic hatred against the yellow people over here. And then the result was you break any solidarity among the brown, the black, the white, the yellow, et cetera, right? It's to break up these multi-ethnic labor coalitions. Again, some key events. The Page Act of 1875, where there was federal restriction targeting Asian immigration, especially Chinese women. And it was framed as this was a morality thing, regulation. Then in 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act, where you ban Chinese labor immigration for 10 years, very much like what Trump's doing now. And it was the first major federal restriction targeting an ethnic working group. So basically, you banned Chinese laborers from immigrating to the United States for 10 years. Okay. Then you had the Geary Act of 1892, which extended exclusion and required documentation, expanded deportation mechanisms, et cetera. Okay. And the exclusion was made permanent in 1902, and Chinese immigration further lockdown took place. So you actually targeted a group and said they can't immigrate at all to the United States. Now, what did this do? Well, the profits of this were quite extraordinary. Many of you remember your history, particularly for the railroad guys and the miners. The Chinese labor helped build, as you know, for pennies, critical infrastructure, railroads, and extraction all over the United States. After profits were locked in, the exclusion was reduced. It reduced workers' rights. And this was used as scapegoating to hide the employer's abuse, okay? But railroads and mining industries massively profited. But what it also did from the standpoint of the federal government was these exclusion laws institutionalized immigration surveillance, papers, raids, deportation. And it actually was a framework for later mass enforcement architectures, and mass surveillance was really the beginning that came out of this. And again, this anti-Chinese campaigns diverted anger away from the real crooks, the rail barons, the people who are doing exploitation of people for mining, metals and all this kind of stuff, right? So over here, the actual crime is taking place. And over here, you attack these poor people who are busting their buns just to survive. Let's finish up with, before we go to the modern thing, Japanese immigrants. So remember, you may remember this. If not, you should be reminded that we actually threw Japanese into prison camps in the United States. There was mass incarceration of Japanese and it expanded state power. So let's go into that. So the narrative against the Japanese, again, following the pattern, oh, they're enemy aliens. They you know, a collective guilt was imposed and civil liberties were suspended on these people. And the divide tactic here was using World War II, war fear, you redirected the economic pain onto a visible minority. So you took all the economic issues and you said, these people are the problem, okay? Same old pattern. But I hope this is becoming clear now with these examples and these details. Again, laws were passed here by Congress, as well as the federal, as well as the executive branch. There was an executive order that was issued in February of 1942, which authorized removal of not 10 Japanese, not 20, not 10,000, 20,000, but 120,000 Japanese Americans were affected by these incarceration policies, mass incarceration, property and income losses. There's close to $1.3 billion in property loss. Japanese American, the Evacuation Claims Act was passed. And that gave token compensation, you know, a little bit of money, but it didn't really address the real issues. And then finally, what did this do? Getting back to our pattern, right? So you attack someone, you pass laws, but ultimately someone wins. So massive asset transfer took place. You had, as you put Japanese into these incarceration camps, you had fire sales of their farms and homes, and a lot of businesses created windfalls for competitors. Community wealth, destruction, weakened long-term economic power. And then finally, what happened was the swarm, you know, this was during the time of World War II. People are coming back from World War II, and you had the explosive growth of the surveillance state, World War II mobilization, expanded federal power, the military industrial complex starts coming to being, war precedents normalize these large scale domestic policing of suspect populations. So the incarceration of the Japanese, attacking them, was really the beginning of the modern surveillance state. It really was. Because again, you attack a racial group over here and you consolidate power or profit over here. So let's bring this home now to what's going on. So now who's the boogeyman? The Somali immigrants. Oh my God, they're committing fraud. So you have this guy out there taking videos. Oh yeah. So you create what appears to be a legitimate enemy. Italians were mafia. The Irish are you know, hooligans. The blacks are uncivilized savages. The American Indians are uncivilized savages, and so on. So you, at the time, it seems, oh my God, these people are bad. They're committing fraud. Well, what you now have is Islamophobia. You have surveillance bans and precarious labor conditions. Let's go through this. So the narrative here is the Somali. So you bring up Islamophobia. They're, the Somalis and the Muslim communities are framed as inherent security threats. The divide tactic is you create a security panic, media stereotyping. You isolate these communities and you justify enforcement budgets, right? So by the way, ICE agents are getting paid, you know, $200K. I don't know if you know this. There's almost a $2 billion budget set aside for ICE for just giving bonuses. So it's an enormous amount of money that's going here to further create the surveillance state. So in October 2001, the Patriot Act, I don't know, many of you know, has been passed in this thing of Islamophobia, right? You've expanded surveillance powers in the name of fighting terrorists. In 2002, you have the special registration system that focused heavily on Muslim majority countries. We don't do anything to people from Israel, right? Nothing happens to Zionists, but you always go after these people. But once you isolate someone here, you can do all sorts of surveillance stuff over here. Executive order that was passed by Trump in March of 2017, it did a 90-day entry restriction, including Somalia, and later proclamations also restricted Somali residents. Now what we have, phase one, is By the way, a lot of people don't know, in Somalia itself, the work that the US imperialists did there really created a huge windfall for the military industrial complex. So much money went into the military to address the chaos in Somalia, okay, which we and the British actually created, okay? So the counter-terror infrastructure that came out of that has become permanent now in the United States. And immigrant communities now become political targets and justify these ongoing budgets. Where we're at, so I wanted to give you this context, because if I didn't give you all these repeated patterns, you'd say something is new right now, okay? So it's not new. You take a group, you brandish them as horrible people, come up with whatever rationale, and you get everyone, all of us, to follow that. Meanwhile, we're fighting against each other, and the biggest consolidation of wealth and control is going over here, okay? So let me wrap this up, and we'll take some questions. So ICE is essentially now entwined into the modern enforcement and surveillance state. The enforcement grows, but the root causes are ignored, as usual. And we, as working people, are divided. Okay, and that's the goal. And by the way, Republicans and Democrats work hand in glove in this. So if you think about this, ICE functions as really the modern enforcement layer. That's what they're becoming. And they do raids, detention, deportation, high fear, low real, any type of reform. And the thing is, they're focusing on workers, not on the war makers or the donor class. By the way, if you look at the list of people that Trump has pardoned, big time fraudsters, and you can just go look it up, the number of people he's pardoned who did billion-dollar frauds is the biggest list that you've seen for any president, okay? So the focus is you have working people attacking each other, and over here, the donor class is getting away with billion-dollar frauds. And this maintains an exploitable underclass. Fear, you suppress wages, and no one really wants to bring working people together. Now, the most important thing, as I mentioned in the beginning, we have three branches of government, the executive in the United States, the judicial, and Congress. Who is responsible for making sure, quote unquote, illegal immigration ends? Who? I've talked about this before. It's not the president, it's not the judges, it's Congress. And Congress, for as long as I can remember, has never solved immigration. They will come up with some solution. Oh, we got to go on vacation. Recess. They never sit there. They're like a kid who never finishes his homework. All right? Now, Congress can solve illegal immigration, but it intentionally, keyword is intentionally, does not. Because it's only Congress that can rewrite immigration law, expand legal pathways, and enforce employer accountability. And the establishment left and right has used this issue of immigration, this is what you really need to get, as purely political theater. One wing says, oh my God, we're doing this. Another wing says, oh no, we do need to do that. Fundraising and votes. They're not stopping illegal, quote unquote, immigration. Both are benefiting from cheap labor, donor protection, and a divided working class. That's what we need to understand. They need illegal immigration. They need to create these biased narratives so we, the people, do not unite. And the result is a permanent illegal category, okay, that maximizes exploitation. They have no interest in solving this. And remember, so as long as working people are fighting, workers with fewer rights are easier to underpay and threaten. The employer billionaire donor class gains massive leverage. Wages for all workers are pressured downward. And this kind of fear reduces reporting of all sorts of unsafe conditions, wage theft, et cetera. So, and in closing, you know, our movement always goes to the root cause. This is the root cause. Why does quote unquote illegal immigration occur? By the way, it's allowed to occur to keep people scary so you can pay them lower, is because US, the swarm, goes to these other countries and steals their wealth. Okay? And in order to steal other countries' gold, minerals, oil, you have to put in dictators. So the U.S. swarm will talk about democracy and wave the flag and talk about the founders, blah, da, 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 da. But at the end of the day, they don't want democracy for other countries. So they intentionally create instability, which leads to displacement of those people coming here, quote unquote, illegal immigration. And then we get to exploit them when they're here. Okay. And again, in the interest of time, because almost 1 minute away from 10, the strategy here is you go to other countries, create war, step one, then those people get displaced. They come to the United States, step two, and step three, they get exploited. Okay? So you create, quote unquote, illegal immigrations. So our interventions in other countries destabilize those economies, right? People flee, often to the US seeking survival. Then they're blamed, criminalized, and exploited as cheap labor. That's what's going on. For those of you, again, if you didn't learn this in history class, you can go watch this video slowly. But if you don't know what, I learned, I had great, some really good history, public school history teachers. Augusto Pinochet, 1973, major coup took place in Chile. So Allende, a democratically elected president of Chile, was overthrown through CIA intervention. We put Pinochet into power. And that was in September 11th, 9/11 again, 1973. And why was this done? It was done on behalf of Anaconda Copper. And you can still look them up. They still exist. And because Chile has enormous copper wealth. So we put Anaconda back in power with Pinochet leading, and he literally shot and buried young student protesters into the walls of a stadium. Okay? And the profits from those mines were, hundreds of millions of dollars that went to Anaconda. So we installed overthrew a democratically elected president and put in Pinochet. And we're getting ready to do the same right now in Iran with this scumbag Reza Pahlavi, okay? Talking about Iran. By the way, February 11th, 1979, it's 47 years, if I'm right, is when the Shah was overthrown, okay? And some people are predicting Trump on February 11th, which is 47 years, is going to, do the war then or between now and then. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, in 1953, a coup took place. The United States did a coup and overthrew. It was an MI6 CIA operation known as Operation Ajax. It was for oil. And a 1954 consortium, after we overthrew the existing government, installed the Shah of Iran, it gave Western companies 50% ownership and 40% shares to five U.S. companies of the oil. So it was an oil extraction mechanism. And that was what took place in Iran, et cetera. Guatemala, right? 1954 coup, if you remember, of Carlos Castillo Armas. Okay? Same process. And who was the winner there? The United Fruit Company. Okay? They were the ones who profited from that coup. And I could keep going on and on and on, but I encourage you guys to do a little bit of research. In every case, we went in, put in a dictator, the people had to flee to other countries. Indonesia, Suharto, many, many movies have been done about this. Zaire, Congo, okay, Mobutu. Again, same thing. Marcos, who imposed martial law. And you can see the United States put Marcos in power. Nicaragua. We put Somoza into power. Iraq, right? That was done on behalf of Halliburton. Billions. Afghanistan. We put the Taliban back into power. Honduras. And you can go on and on and on. So what does this all mean in closing? All of this as our movement keeps pounding away, is to make sure we as working people do not build a bottoms-up movement. That is what this is all about. And we in this movement are all about getting you off your butt, open your eyes, and to see this dynamic. It's a systems dynamic. So we stop fighting each other, we follow the money, and we unite beyond left and right. Everything now with social media, it's actually decentralized, centralized manipulation. And that's what's going on. So, you know, the swarm strategy in closing across centuries now has been you create a target group, you manufacture bias, you pass laws against them, and then you deploy enforcement. That's what ICE is doing right now. You keep the labor cheap, you keep the rights very, very weak, and the communities get fearful. Then you run wars and chaos to extract wealth, and then you blame the displaced people. And what would actually solve this? As I keep saying, Congress, the representatives of all of us, they're the ones who can actually solve this. But they don't want to do anything. They're part of the war machine. So they don't want to do anything. So the only way out of this is we, as a multi-ethnic group of working people, need to have solidarity. We need to fight, and we need to understand the system dynamics. And that's what I wanted to do in this talk. And the only movement on this planet that is teaching you this, the scholarly piece, and then teaching you how we can come together in these open houses. We have leadership meetings every Saturdays. We get people to actually do stuff. We actually have solutions as our movement. So if you're an adult and you're actually honest, you have to join this movement. You have to get everyone else to join this movement, because otherwise we're going to keep repeating this pattern. And it doesn't mean just because a pattern's occurred, you can't break it. Okay. So that's where we're at. So don't think, oh my God, the Somalis are committing fraud. Yeah. The Indians are savages. Okay. That's what this worldview promotes. But understand that those in power can overnight create any worldview that they want. And the end goal of that is not about truth, about stopping fraud, because the elites commit the biggest fraud, is to make sure we don't unite. So that's what's going on. And I hope this was valuable. So ICE exists, if we can bring up our little thing that, the little graphic here, ICE exists to divide and rule as they profit. So this is the best few words that summarizes everything. And you as smart people need to go educate people on this. If you're on social media, share this video. Share the dynamics I've talked about. This has been happening for close to, at least in the United States, for close to 400 years now. And that's what's going on. So nothing is different than what you're seeing with Somalis or what occurred with the Japanese or Chinese, et cetera. It's the same old shit. The issue is, will we have the intelligence and the leadership to educate our working people? And I believe we will. Why? Because our movement exists. If we didn't exist, there would be no hope, but we exist. Thank you. I hope this was valuable. Go back and review this. Study history. History may not be the same, but it sure rhymes. We'll take some questions.
That was brilliant. Thank you, Dr. Shiva. Okay, so we're entering the Q&A period. And in the...
By the way, Barb, one second. I just want to let you know, everyone knows that we as a movement are running for U.S. Senate. Yeah. I'm the symbol. You know, I have the credentials. I've proven that I'll fight for people. But my running for Senate is a opportunity for all of you to actually be able to participate, whether you're in Massachusetts or anywhere in the world. You can help make phone calls to get Massachusetts people, if you can bring up the site Shiva for Senate, to pledge their vote. We are getting the vote out now. So whether you're in Australia, England, Japan, wherever the hell you are, you can help make phone calls to people in Massachusetts. If you can bring up ShivaForSenate.com, tell them to go to Shiva for Senate, Can someone bring that up, please?
Yeah.
And you can go right to this website and you can tell people to pledge their vote now. And we're doing this. Can you go to the front page so people can see that? So we can go to ShivaForSenate.com. There's a button that says, I will vote for Dr. Shiva. So all of you listening, wherever you are, if you're watching this video and you know people in Massachusetts, tell them to go there and click on that. I will vote for Dr. Shiva. So we get their email, their phone. And why do we need that? Because we want to make sure that they don't steal the election from us. So we're getting people to say, I'm going to pledge to vote for Dr. Shiva. We're going to track their vote for them, unlike the corrupt government. Okay. So wherever you are, get people in Massachusetts to pledge your vote. And if you're in Massachusetts, go tell 10 of your neighbors to go pledge. This is actually doing something. You say, see, I'm giving you guys stuff to do, not to whine. You say, go there, pledge, get on, make phone calls. Okay. We see a lot of people from our warrior community here who are in other parts. Marianne in Arizona, Barbara in Florida, Zach in West Virginia are making calls into Massachusetts. That's a fucking movement. You got to do the work. You got to allocate time. You're not just sitting there watching videos and being on TikTok. Are you ready to do work? We will give you work to do to break you out of this mindless pattern that I just went through. Go to Shiva for Senate. Go to Truth Freedom Health. If you can go, someone go there, truthfreedomhealth.com. Sign up for the Get Off the Plantation course. It's free. It took me 50 years to organize this. You can go to Truth Freedom Health. You can watch Shatter the Swarm video. But we give you stuff to do. So you don't have any more fucking excuses to say, I don't know what to do. No, we'll tell you what the fuck to do. Okay? So get involved. Go right up there. Sign up for the Explorer thing. It's free. You get all this stuff. You, in fact, will teach you how to take care of your health, meet other people, etc. We actually do stuff. We're not sitting here talking about what occurred 10 years ago. Okay, you can go watch Fucker Carlson for that. All right, let's take some questions.
So I've dropped the instructions in the chat, everybody. And please, out of respect for Dr. Shiva's time, do not raise your hand. We're asking you to think clearly and write your question in the chat so that it's actually making sense. So only questions that are dropped into the chat will be addressed. To do that, just put your mouse over the new chat. A drop list will appear and just send the message to the host, co-host, or Dr. Shiva. So we'll
The other thing is, those of you on social media listening, you can post your questions in the comment section and our producers there will take your question and put it in our chat. And also, those of you listening, come to the open house. Between 8 to 9, we have breakout rooms. We track what people are doing, what you can do in your community, wherever you are on the globe. Our community is global. Singapore, Finland, Australia, India, Chile. We're all over the world. We're the only movement built by working people for working people. Get involved.
Yeah. And reminder, we are onboarding volunteers right now, you guys. So if you want to get involved in making calls to Massachusetts residents, contact any of us and we will get you onboarded. And you can join the telethons. And the telethon's going to be happening next week at the open house as well, 11 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as well as during the week. So get in touch with us. We're onboarding right now.
So Jeremiah says, can someone compare Dr. Shiva to the politician on your ballot? Spreadsheet to compare with policies. Yes. Yeah, so Jeremiah, we've done this every time we've run. It's a great technique. You put Dr. Shiva on your politician and what our policies are. Okay. We've done that. If Andrew or Suresh or anyone is here, if you guys can bring up one important meme in 2026, that represents the meme that we want to bring about is a middle finger. And if Andrew or Suresh can share that, you know, in 2017 when we ran, we had, I believe art is a movement of its times, as one philosopher said. So we had a picture of me and Elizabeth Warren, and that was a meme, right? Me, the Indian, the real Indian, Elizabeth Warren, the fake Indian. Well, the meme that's appropriate for our time right now is this meme, if we can bring it up. It's a middle finger. And the middle finger, by the way, 2 years ago, you guys may know this, when I was cursing, everyone would say, why are you cursing? Why are you cursing? It seems like after we started cursing, everyone now curses, okay? It's really funny. It's not, but we did it in a very genuine way, but people are doing it essentially to get clicks and views. I never did it for that, but this middle finger, after we put this out there, Trump's been now showing the middle finger. If you saw recently, he did that to a Michigan worker. But the middle finger says the middle works. It's a double entendre, which means we, the people, work. And we actually work. We're the only ones that works. To the left of the middle finger, you have, from your left, you have Bernie Sanders, AOC, Mamdani, and the donkey looking at the rising of this middle finger. They're scared by it. And to the right, you have Tucker Carlson, booby fucking Kennedy, Trump, and the elephant looking at the middle finger. And below, it's us people rising. So the middle works. The middle meaning we the people coming together. And we're going to be pounding away this theme to all of you that we as working people need to unite. And the swarm does everything for 400 years in U.S. history to make sure we don't unite. So we got to give them the middle finger. Okay? Thank you for that advertisement. So Rajiv, from Rajiv, I assume he's offline. Why is there a massive anti-Indian campaign? How does it help any American if H-1B visas are curtailed? All would take over anyway. AI, it's more like getting votes out by shifting the focus. Yeah. So Rajiv, if you just, you can answer your own question if you just apply the pattern I've said. Okay. So Indians are basically, slave labor for the technical realm, right? Software engineers. So the same pattern. You demean Indians. And then the Indians that do come over from India simply want to just work. And they want to send money home. And because they're isolated, you brandish them in such a way that you demean them. And that's what's going on. So again, it's the same pattern, right? And yes, you're right. The goal is to shift the focus away from the real criminals who are the Zionists. But what's really important to understand in each of these cases that I've shared with you, the group that's typically attacked does isolate themselves. And it takes great courage for that group to say, we're not going to be isolated. We're actually going to fight back and unite with our fellow workers. And the H-1B Indians need to do that. One of the weaknesses of those Indians coming here, many of them actually want to become elites. And we've talked about this. So they actually don't have solidarity with the American working class. They just want to come here, work, and send their money back home. So the only way out of this, Rajiv, is for those immigrant groups that are being attacked to reach out and find ways to reach out to unite with other segments of the working class. It's the only fucking way. Next. Otherwise, you just become another victim. Anyway, this is quite a bit of stuff I've shared here, Barb. It's a lot of history there. But I hope the reason I did so many was to show it's the same freaking pattern. It's the same song that's being played. Same song. And the more we, or the less we do anything about it, the power consolidates more and more and more. And that's why you have this guy, Bovino. I mean, he literally looked like he was dressed in a Nazi jacket walking around. So power essentially, it's not like power suddenly just dissipates. Oh, I can get away with that. I can get away with that. I can get away with that. You keep getting away with more and more stuff. You create more of a surveillance state, more power, and people are just sort of, you know, not exposing this, not educating people on this. We have another one here from YouTube. During election, a certain group was accused of eating the cats and dogs. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Trump said they eat cats and dogs. Yeah. So anyway, you see, you can take any racial group and find something to say against them. And politicians know this. You know, you can find any group and you can find something and you can stir it up. Okay? That's what's interesting, right? And the swarm knows this, right? So they'll find some idiosyncrasy with that group. They'll stir it up and make the others feel better about themselves by attacking another group. Okay? It's very, very evil because every group is a little bit different. Everyone looks a little bit different, right? So you can take something they look differently, something the way they act, something they dress differently, accentuate that, right? Oh, they look like uncivilized barbarians, right? They are grease balls, right? They are towel heads. I mean, you can keep making up all these crazy shit because everyone has some idiosyncrasy, right? And you just accentuate that. All right, take one more. Yvette, oops, Pinnock says, how are you supposed to navigate our way through surveillance systems that are constantly monitoring our activities? You can't help but feel like you don't know who to trust. You can easily find yourself in situations where you can't differentiate threats from perceived threats. Yeah, so I think of that, this is one of the outcomes of isolation. So one is the surveillance state with modern systems is accelerating. So what that ultimately leads people to do is to become more and more and more isolated. Okay? The only way out of that is connection and building community. And that's what we do in our open houses. So we organize activities, local, you know, online, et cetera. So you have to understand that at a certain point, just like you have to ultimately take accountability for your own health, the medical system is not going to do it for you. You have to take accountability for your own societal connections. It's not like it's just going to happen. You have to take time like you're doing tonight to come to an open house. You have to find people who are serious about consciously taking care of their mental, physical health. And that's really the ultimate journey where you stand up on your own two feet. You say, hey, I can determine my destiny. I'm going to go find people. Yeah, they're doing all this shit to me, but I still can do shit on my own. All right. So there's not, you're a victim. You still have incredible ability to make choices and change the course of history. But if you do not understand what I just said, you will mentally just become a victim of this surveillance state. Okay? So the surveillance state controls you, not by being a surveillance state, but making you think, oh my God, I can't do anything now. No, you still have tremendous amount of freedom. And it's a 2-degree shift you have to do mentally. Now, because we have this movement, because we bring people together, we are in our existence is to inspire you to say, oh, those people are doing that. Why is Barb Hurd, you know, leading these things? Why is Lynn staying awake in UK at this hour, right? Who are these people? Why is everyone in our movement work full time and they do this? Where are these people coming from? So if they can do it, I can do this. Okay. So you have to go inspire people. And that's what our movement exists, that we're doing it. Why don't you join us? So we have extraordinary people in our movement who have overcome all the bullshit. They stand on their own two feet. They do activities. They're not waiting for someone else. There's no Messiah fucking coming, okay? We have to be our messiahs. So in closing, we have a right now, in the next 11 months, less than that, 10 months, all of you, wherever you are, can participate in helping us win the United States Senate race in Massachusetts. wherever you are. And Massachusetts is a center point of global evil. It is a center point of the headquarters of Harvard and MIT, the military-industrial complex. Our winning a U.S. Senate seat would be like a bomb went off. So I'm giving you all an opportunity for your own journey to participate. Get involved. It'll be gone like that. You can spend as little as 5 hours a week helping us, and it'll have enormous effect for your personal life and everyone else's. Get involved. Go to Shiva for Senate. Go to truthfreedomhealth.com. Get involved. Get involved. Get involved. Do something. Move. Thank you. Thank you, Barb. Thank you, Marianne, Zach, Suresh, for helping us out. But do stuff. Action speaks much louder than words. Action, action, action. We give you a lot of stuff to do. So get involved. Thank you, everyone.
Eva. Thank you.
Be well. We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite working people. There's only one movement that can do that. And that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left wing, right wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train an army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up, working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is the not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is the not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing, Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement. And that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own quote-unquote people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhelp.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics, and I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. Now, the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhelp.com. So people can sign in, they can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there. But we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhelp.com. Welcome to VA Shiva. VA Shiva is a product of my journey across East and West, science and tradition, ancient and modern, that brings you the science of systems so you can become a force for truth, freedom, health. VA Shiva is a platform of revolutionary education, community building, and weaponry for unleashing local activism. My journey to VA Shiva begins in the chaos of Bombay, where I experienced diverse religions, languages, castes, and in a small village that had no running water, no electricity, where my grandmother, a poor village farmer, practiced Siddha, an ancient system of Indian medicine over 10,000 years old. She observed one's face, the art of Samudrika Lakshanam, to understand a body's unique constitution, allowing her to deliver the right medicine for the right person at the right time. Watching my grandmother heal others, I was inspired to study medicine. But I was also aware of the corrupt caste system of India, which denigrated a human being, where my family were considered low caste untouchables, where one's birth determined one's destiny. The grit and determination of my mother and father led them to get educated and to come to America, a one in a trillion event. Their actions inspired me to work hard and excel. While in ninth grade, I attended New York University in a computer science program, and subsequently, at the age of 14, was given a full-time job as a research fellow at what is now known as Rutgers Medical School in the heart of Newark, New Jersey. There, I investigated the system of sleep using mathematics, computer science, and biology for sudden infant death syndrome. It was there in Newark where I invented email when I was the first to convert every feature of the physical, paper-based inner office mail system, including inbox, outbox, memo, carbon copy, blind carbon copy, attachments, into its electronic equivalent, a system which I named email, a term that I was the first to coin. On August 30th, 1982, I was awarded the first U.S. copyright for the invention of this system, recognizing me as the inventor of email. At that time, copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I went on to MIT, where I earned 4 degrees across multiple systems of engineering, electrical, mechanical, design, biological. That training led me to invent many other systems for advancing humankind. Echomail, the world's first intelligent email management system. Cytosol, a computational biology system for eliminating animal testing to discover new medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. And to the creation of a whole systems methodology for certifying clean food. These innovations led me back on a Fulbright to India, where I discovered the missing link between Eastern medicine and Western systems theory, honoring my grandmother, to develop Your Body, Your System, a powerful tool that will help you understand how your body is a system and how the inputs of food, supplements, and exercise bring your body back to its natural system state. And Systems Health, an integrative educational discipline that is now integrated into the VA Shiva platform that will enable you to learn the science of systems, the science of everything, be it your body as a system or our society and politics as a system, to reveal the foundational interrelationships between truth, freedom, health. Now is the time for you to be the light, learn the science of systems, build community, and weaponize yourself to unleash the activism necessary to deliver truth, freedom, health in your local community. Welcome to VA Shiva.